Hey, it's Gabe. I want to recommend a podcast I think you'll enjoy called What Could Go Right. On What Could Go Right, the hosts, Progress Network founder Zachary Carabel and executive director Emma Varva Lucas, sit down with expert guests to discuss the world's most pressing issues. They look back at how far society has come and look forward to what it will take to achieve a brighter future. If you're looking for a weekly dose of optimistic ideas from smart people, listen to What Could Go Right wherever you get your podcasts.
What if AI could help your business deliver mission-critical outcomes with speed? With IBM Consulting, your business can design, build, and scale trusted AI using Watson X and modernize the way you work to accelerate real impact. Let's create AI that transforms your business. Learn more at ibm.com/consulting. IBM. Let's create.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hello, everyone. It's Eves checking in here to let you know that you're going to be hearing two different events in history in this episode. They're both good, if I do say so myself. On with the show. Welcome back to This Day in History class, where we reveal a new piece of history every day. The day was May 4th, 1919. At around 1:30 in the afternoon, about 3,000 students from universities in Beijing gathered at the Gate of Heavenly Peace in Tiananmen Square. They were protesting the Versailles Peace Conference, which gave German rights over Shandong, an eastern Chinese province, to Japan. The demonstrations marked a peak in the May 4th movement, an intellectual revolution and socio-political reform movement in China. In 1914, Japan seized control of Shandong from Germany. The next year, Japan issued a set of demands known as the 21 Demands that would extend Japanese control of Manchuria and the Chinese economy. The demands called for China to recognize Japan's seizure of German spheres of influence in China. Facing the threat of war, Chinese President Yuan Shikai accepted most of the demands to appease Japan. This appeasement was not well received by many Chinese folks. An anti-Japanese sentiment grew in China. On top of that, the warlord era that began in China after Yuan's death in 1916 caused much social and political strife. The New Culture Movement also helped build the foundation for the May 4th movement. New Youth, established by Peking University professor Chen Duxiu, was a monthly magazine that promoted ideals like science and democracy while opposing some traditional Chinese ideals and Confucian values. Intellectuals who were inspired by New Youth began advocating for reform and denouncing parts of Chinese heritage. They uplifted notions of nationalism, liberalism, and socialism. They also suggested a new vernacular writing style that would replace the classical written Wenyan Chinese. In 1917, China declared war against Germany. China joined the war on the side of the Allies, under the condition that it would get back all German spheres of influence, including Shandong. The Allies were victorious. But when the Treaty of Versailles was drawn up in 1919, Shandong was given to Japan. This controversy became known as the Shandong Question, or Shandong Problem. and the Chinese public was upset about that transfer of rights. Students at Beijing University drafted a manifesto written by Luo Jialin. It said, in part, "This is the last chance for China in her life and death struggle. Today we swear two solemn oaths with all our fellow countrymen. First, China's territory may be conquered, but it cannot be given away. Second, the Chinese people may be massacred, but they will not surrender. Our country is about to be annihilated. Up, brethren." Opposed to the Chinese delegation's actions at the Paris conference, a coalition of student groups decided to hold a demonstration on May 7th. But when the news about Shandong broke, they decided to act quickly. So on May 4th, 1919, representatives from several student organizations met at the Peking College of Law and Political Science to plan the demonstration. They settled on five resolutions, which were as follows. Telegrams would be sent to all interested and involved organizations domestically and abroad, asking them to protest the Shandong Resolution. They would educate the Chinese masses about what was happening at the conference. A centralized organization of all student groups would be established for organizational and administrative purposes. And finally, the route for the demonstration that afternoon would start at Tiananmen Gate and move through the business area of the city. That afternoon, thousands of students from 13 universities gathered at Tiananmen Square. They passed out flyers that said China would not concede Shandong to Japan, and they called for the Beiyang government not to ratify the Treaty of Versailles. The students marched to the legation quarter in Beijing, where the foreign embassies were located, and presented letters to foreign ministers. Diplomat Cao Rulin's house was burned down. The next day, the student protesters in Beijing went on strike, and students elsewhere in China followed. Students also boycotted Japanese goods. Several students were harmed or died in the demonstrations, and more than 1,000 were arrested. In early June, somewhere around 100,000 industrial workers in Shanghai went on a week-long general strike. The workers began demanding higher wages and better working conditions. Facing the pressure of all the protests, the government finally gave in. The entire cabinet resigned, the government released student prisoners, dismissed pro-Japanese officials, and refused to sign the Versailles Treaty. But Japan still had control of the Shandong Peninsula. China signed a treaty with Germany in 1921, and in 1922, Shandong was returned to China. As part of the deal, Japanese residents living in Shandong got special privileges. The anti-imperialist May 4th movement is seen as a turning point in Chinese intellectual thought. Literature using vernacular Chinese emerged. The nationalist Kuomintang Party was reorganized. Mass meetings were held throughout China for the common people, and partly because the Chinese viewed the Shandong problem as a betrayal by the Western powers, they turned away from ideals of democracy and toward communism. Chinese political movement became more radical. I'm Eve Jeffcoat, and hopefully you know a little more about history today than you did yesterday. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at TDIHC Podcast. Thanks for showing up. We'll meet here again tomorrow. May the 4th be with you.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Hello, everyone. I'm Eves, and welcome to This Day in History Class, a podcast that brings you a new nugget of history every day. The day was May 4th, 1886. A peaceful labor demonstration in Chicago turned into a riot after a bomb was set off. In the U.S. in the late 1800s, industrial capitalism was on the rise, and working conditions were poor. Tens of thousands of workers died in workplace accidents every year between 1881 and 1900, and workdays were often 12 to 14 hours long, 6 days a week. Unions, formed to protect workers' rights and interests, were also on the rise as more people took jobs in factories, mines, and mills. Factions of socialists, communists, and anarchists were linked to the labor movement. The National Labor Union, founded in 1866, pressed for labor reforms like the 8-hour workday. It dissolved in 1873. The Knights of Labor began as a secret organization in 1869, but once it abandoned its secrecy a decade later, membership grew quickly. By the 1880s, strikes organized by labor unions were commonplace. In 1884, the Federation of Organized Trades and Labor Unions, the predecessor of the American Federation of Labor, passed a resolution saying that a legal workday would be 8 hours beginning May 1, 1886. Since legislative action had failed to help them achieve this goal, the resolution called for a general strike. Chicago emerged as a national center for the 8-hour movement, as the city's mayor, Carter Harrison, was sympathetic to labor issues. During his time in office, he saw a lot of labor unrest, and he often restrained police from intervening in strikes. Despite the fact that many labor leaders opposed strikes, thousands of workers participated in strikes and rallies across the U.S. on May 1, 1886. In Chicago, the general strike started off as peaceful, but on May 3rd, a strike at the McCormick Harvesting Machine Company plant turned violent. When strikers clashed with strike breakers, the Chicago police fired on the crowd, killing or wounding several of the demonstrators. In response to this incident, labor activists called for a rally the next day at Haymarket Square. Mayor Harrison attended the rally on May 4th, where labor activist August Fees and anarchist Albert Parsons were some of the people to give speeches. Somewhere between several hundred and a few thousand people were in the crowd. Harrison declared that the rally was not a threat, but police officers remained nearby. By the time the Methodist preacher and labor activist Samuel Fielden began to speak, the weather was getting worse and much of the crowd had already left. But near the end of the rally, a group of officers showed up to disperse the crowd. An unknown person threw a dynamite bomb near the police, and the police began to fire into the crowd. In the chaos that ensued, 7 officers and around 4 workers were killed. It's been estimated that at least 100 people were injured in the Haymarket riot. The incident triggered anti-labor and anti-immigrant sentiments. That August, 8 men were sentenced to death or time in prison for the bombing, even though no solid evidence linked them to the incident. The press depicted the men as violent anarchists. Some people condemned them as radical, while others viewed them as martyrs. 3 of the men were later pardoned.
People also began to blame the Knights of Labor for the Haymarket Affair, associating the organization with violence and anarchism. Membership in the Knights declined as workers began flocking to the American Federation of Labor. The labor movement continued to advocate for the 8-hour workday. Different industries reduced working hours until the New Deal's Fair Labor Standards Act provided for a 40-hour workweek in 1938. I'm Eve Jeffcoat, and hopefully you know a little more about history today than you did yesterday. And if you have any suggestions for the show or any other comments, you can hit us up on social media. We're at TDIHC Podcast. You can also send us a note via email at thisday@iheartmedia.com. Thanks again for listening to the show, and we'll see you tomorrow.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
We are the voice of NASCAR.
The green flag is in the air, and we are underway the great American race.
The Motor Racing Network. NASCAR Cup, Xfinity, and Craftsman Truck Series Racing. Live on your hometown radio station and MRN or NASCAR.com. Martinsville, Talladega, the Chicago Street Course. We have the side-by-side action and last lap passes for the win.
Photo finishes. Ryan Blaney will win.
The voice of NASCAR, the Motor Racing Network.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.